I guess I'm doing the intro, huh? Hello there, guys, gals, and non-binary pals. Welcome to that D&D podcast. I am Zach, and I will be, I think, running a game tonight. We'll see if I can actually do that on track. With me are some of the usual suspects. I will allow them to introduce themselves now in Discord order.
Hi, as always, I am Adam, he, him. Today I will be, I don't know, are we doing character stuff yet, or is that?
No, we'll do that here in a little bit. Let's just sort of introduce ourselves. I'll give the lay of the land, and then we'll introduce our motley crew of
misfits.
Okay.
Definitely heroes, yes.
You just want to save that for after the first ad read or whatever. Hi, I'm Jonathan.
We have ad reads?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for all the sponsorship deals we definitely get.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Yeah, but I'm Jonathan, he, they, and yeah, we're going to have fun. It's totally normal and not weird as hell.
Hi, Matt. Also, he, they. Yeah, this is totally going to be an absolutely normal game where nothing weird or messed up will happen. Promise.
Hi, I'm Mike J. Darkson Brouard, and I am playing a character that I guess we'll describe later.
But it doesn't involve fingers.
Or hands, or claws.
Maybe hips.
Very specifically.
All right, well, it occurs to me now that I was so excited I forgot to give my pronouns. They are he, him. So for those listening at home or at the gym or wherever, really, we are embarking on some adventures in a setting that is near and dear to my heart. And I am very excited to get this game off the ground and see exactly how fast we can leave a smoking crater. We are playing Rifts. Specifically, we are playing Savage Rifts, which is the Savage World version of the Rifts setting. And for those who are unfamiliar with the Rifts setting, it is it's sort of like Shadowrun. There's technology, there's magic, but there's also like mecha and kaiju and demonic entities from beyond the stars and killer satellites. It's a lot. It's
like Shadowrun, you dial up the gonzo.
Yeah, it's like if Shadowrun stopped giving a crap about making sense sometimes. And I hate to say it that way because Rifts does make internal sense, but it does not make external sense at all. Like, once you see the setting move, it's like, okay, I get that. But if you look at it from the outside, it's just giant, like, giant, wildly shiny, for some reason, space robots punching dragons. And also, there's, like, a werewolf in the background for some reason.
Yeah, werewolf Roman centurion fist fighting a squad of marines.
These dudes... is a 13-year-old's power went out, right? Mm-hmm. All they've got is, you know, it's like it's raining outside. You know, there's some thunderstorm going on. They've got a lantern and like all of the toys from their childhood, and they've got to not be bored.
Yes,
and that's Rifts.
It's incredibly apt because I was going to say we have all been cast into Zach's toy box. God help us all.
Basically, yes. And I'm going to start... We're starting at the shallow end of the pool. We're starting at the shallow end of the pool. But it's a pool that's, like, got piranhas in it. So the shallow end may not actually help you that much. So yeah, that's where we're at. We are launching into a set of adventures around... this would mean nothing to basically anyone ever, but the Fall of Tolkien, which was a big deal in Rifts. Once upon a time, like 30 years ago. So yeah, our heroes are playing...
Our protagonists
are assisting the war efforts from the Tolkien side, meaning they are fighting the coalition, because always punch fascists. And sometimes you punch fascists with your brain, which is at least one of our abilities to do. And so, yeah, we are going to be starting the campaign in a place called, why can I come up with the name all of a sudden? Ironheart, which is, because this is a post-apocalyptic setting, it's often characterized as post-post-apocalypse because everything's sort of come back and people are, like, living and it's not, like, shit falling apart constantly. But we're starting in Detroit, what used to be Detroit. And we're stationed out of Minneapolis. So this is sort of geographically where we are. In our initial foray, our protagonists have been tasked with the recovery of a defecting coalition scientist. Some scientist is leaving the Nazis and wants to come over to the Tolkien side. And intends to make contact in Ironheart, which is itself a coalition-controlled city, but not like a hardcore coalition-controlled city. This is like on the outskirts of the really iron-fisted part of the Empire. So that's where we're going to start. We're going to start in this fairly bustling metropolis relative of Ironheart. So, yeah. We're on the streets of Ironheart looking for this scientist. You've been given a description. We'll go over it in a minute. But why don't we describe ourselves? It is let's say it's like a May afternoon in Detroit, where Detroit used to be at least, right? The city that was Detroit and is now Ironheart. Manufacturing capital of the continent. There are people bustling around, moving from stall to stall, vendors selling things. Most of the legal businesses are run by humans, because the Coalition is a human supremacist organization. But there are non-humans around, and there aren't any obvious, like, Coalition soldiers in their sleek, shiny, black skeleton armor. Their dead boy, air quotes, armor. There are a bunch of people and a bunch of vendors selling things. People moving about. We're in sort of an open air market area that caters to adventurers, essentially. People who would have reason to buy things from Ironheart, like Northern Gun laser weaponry or power armor or things of this nature.
Or food.
Or food. There's definitely food here too. Right? Think of it like it sort of looks like if you've ever seen like one of those, have you ever been like the Italian market in Philadelphia or somewhere like that where there's a bunch of semi-permanent vending stalls set up, right? And then sort of things grow from there. So originally there was probably just like a cart that sold guns and then a cart that sold like skewers of some bizarre animal popped up next to it, right? And then that just kept fractaling outwards until you have this scenario. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gug slithers up to somebody cooking something that looks like meat.
Okay. Yes. Describe Gug for our audience at home.
Let's see. Gug is a hexapod, but like a snake, a reptilian hexapod, but two of the limbs, one is the body / tail, and one is the head / mouth. The other limbs are arms, ? Gug's what's called a DB in the Rifts world. They are the alien aliens. They're not from here. Gug is a, let's go with refugee, in the sense that Gug is not here with the blessings of any government or pretty much anybody. Gug's a Vernulian. Vernulians are hated because they tend to be weird, gross, bad. They've got a bad reputation, bizarre physiology, non-standard. They're not humanoid, right? They're not walking around in two legs. They got a head and an arm, or a handful of arms, but Aside from that, yeah, they're not. They make people uncomfortable, and Vernilians have the unfortunate habit of when they first get here, they tend to eat a lot of humans because on our world, humans are cows. They're not humans. They're just there's a cow-like creature or human-like creature that are our cows. Delicious, plentiful, edible. And it was very surprising when they started complaining when we started to eat them.
The cows have guns. Great.
Yes, the cows have guns and mega damage armor. It's much harder to eat them if they're not into being eaten on this planet. DB, as mentioned earlier by our intrepid Gug, is short for dimensional beings. The eponymous rifts of the setting lead to other dimensions, and that's where the dragons and magic and werewolves came from. So Gug came through one of those and is not in good standing with a bunch of others of his kind that came. Is Gug male?
No.
There. Is, yeah. Gug. Okay. Sorry. I apologize.
Sorry.
A bunch of their kindred is of a bent that is not agreeable to Gug, and Gug is on the run from them. It should also be mentioned that Vernulians are not particularly well liked, but are also not particularly well known, especially this far north of the equator. They made planetfall in South America, and Gug slithered this far north. So you're probably off-putting, but not like actively known, not a known entity as a person eater. Can't call you a cannibal because cannibals eat their own kind. You eat people. So,
predator, right. Carnivore.
There you go. So Gug slithers, undulates up to a cart that is selling, yeah, skewers of it's cleaned meat, and it's yeah, they look like kebabs. They're kebabs. It's a little kebab stand.
I should probably clarify that Gug probably doesn't. Gug's semi-aquatic. I don't think that Gug moves with just their body tailstock. They probably use everything except their headstock.
Okay.
So they kind of like five-limbed slither crawl patter.
Okay.
Like, okay. Think of a giant starfish walking towards you.
Okay, I was fine until there. Okay, cool. You do, and so as you are moving through the market in this fashion, right? You are definitely getting some looks, but this is the kind of place that sees a lot of pretty unusual stuff, right? So as you, and you're also, we should say that Gug is psychic, right? Which will become important soon. How psychic is Gug? Can Gug, like, read minds?
Gug has telekinesis and mind link. But okay. I believe I have to establish a connection for
mind. Yeah, mind link doesn't work with with people who aren't into being mind linked. So, you might catch a little bit of a psychic impression that, like, as you undulate up to this cart, the proprietor is both, like, I mean, these mammals are hard to read, right? You don't really, you're still coming to grips with their various, like, weird higher ape emotionalities, right?
Yeah.
Or emotives, where they tell you how they feel through their face. That's weird. Like, I don't get it. This one, you get the impression that immediately they're slightly uncomfortable with you there, but then they very quickly collect themselves. And
all right, Gug slings up a tentacle on the table like it's like an elbow. They've seen humans do this,
okay?
Right, like they're settling up the bar, and they kind of cock their head to one side like they've seen humans do as well, and they go, "Oh, hi there, hun. What's in the hot dish?" Because this is a Midwestern slang thing, right?
They actually have a Midwestern accent when they do this.
Well, Gug strangely is charmingly fluent linguist. Who can disarm people by being friendly in their native language. people find Gug charming once they start talking.
I love this.
I forgot about that. Okay. well, oh yeah, don't you know, hon? We have the space gecko skewers today. They're very good. Very good. Coming from way up north.
Do you have anything with fur?
Oh yeah, don't you know? We got some rhino buffalo steaks over here. They're top notch, but you're going to be paying for them because they came all the way from Arizona.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I will take one, please. Thank you very much. I couldn't resist the lovely smell of your wonderful cooking, and I had to come by and see what you were making.
Well, all righty then. Hold on one moment. And she, like, reaches under the counter, and there's, like, a sort of, like, zip sucking noise. And then she pulls a plate up over the counter in both hands, and it has on it a well-cooked, I don't even know if you eat cooked food, it has on it a well-cooked, but it's like an inch thick, like, cut of some kind of red meat, and then some, like, garnish on top, and then, like, what might be potatoes on one corner of the plate. And she just sort of slides it across at you, making very sure to keep all of her limbs on this side of the plate from
that's,
you.
That's smart, yeah.
Well, here you go now, hon. This should do you just fine.
Gug gets one of those, like probably in an uncomfortable, dead-eyed look at the meat, and raises it with its mind, and like chokes it all down without swallowing. Probably gives the proprietor an unnecessary view of the wild assortment of teeth in Gug's mouth, and then smiles. Thank you.
Thank you. That'll be 30 credits there, hon.
You know, I don't know if I have any money.
You almost certainly have some money. We'll gloss over it for now. We'll come back to that. That's all right.
Okay. Yeah, I will float some money over to them. Actually, no. I will hand it with my tentacle because it makes them deeply uncomfortable.
Oh, yes. They do not. They 100% do not want to take the, like, cred chip from your tentacle at all.
I make sure to do more contact than is strictly necessary for handing over a credit chip.
Yeah, they do not like this. They sort of like, it's sort of like a squirrel and a candy bar situation, right? They're either holding out just a little chunk of candy bar and just sort of like darts out, grabs, darts back. But with the difference being like this, she can't move back very far. She's in that sort of like serving trench behind the counter, and she does not like the scenario at all. So while this is happening, is anyone doing their job?
Perdicion probably is.
Okay.
He was given a mission and he will carry it out.
Okay, so you know you were supposed to be here looking for... And they gave you a photo of her description. She's looks like a pretty well-to-do, like coalition lady from Chi-Town, which is the new name for Chicago, which is where the Nazis were founded and continue to have their strongest holds.
Essentially, Chicago is Berlin, 1941.
Essentially, yeah. And I think let's say they gave like she's gonna be wearing a purple scarf, and like they gave you a description of her scarf and her hat. It should be fairly easy to pick out because I mean, who wears those things on in like tromping through Michigan and Illinois in?
You are asking the 8-foot Hulk in a business suit and orange and flaming luchador mask.
Yes. Yeah, so why don't we get a full description? I'm imagining Perdition like scanning the horizon, like in my head, and you can definitely correct me if I'm wrong, in my head, I'm imagining you doing like the full like hand over eyes, looking down like the tick style down each incoming road walkway, like very like overly dramatizing your diligence.
Like probably if he could, he would have a film crew following around filming in like Super 8, you know, projector style film.
Look, so that way we gotta talk about media drones, because we can get you one of those.
Oh, don't tempt me so. Tempt me not.
We are in the right place to get you some media drones, because I'm pretty sure Northern Gun makes those.
There might need to be an ask, if that is a possibility, because you know, the children in the orphanages back home, they need inspiration, and so we'll need to have some recordings of Perdición's exploits for them.
Great.
So yes, Perdición is looking up and down the streets for the very distinctive description that they were given for their contact.
Okay. Yeah, so there are a lot of people around, and a lot of them, they sort of run the gamut from, like, farmers who rolled into town looking for something like farming equipment, to grizzled adventurers, to like small rowdy bands of mercs. Like, there's just like, this is sort of the outskirts of Ironheart, where people who aren't from Ironheart go to Ironheart. Does that make sense?
Yeah. This is the place, essentially the loading dock for the town.
Yeah. There's and until we get everybody introduced, there's no sign of our primary yet. So we'll keep a lookout.
He's also keeping an eye out, of course, for trouble of a supernatural sort, because just don't truck with that.
That's fair. Well, why don't you give me a notice roll then?
All right.
Let's make our first roll.
Oh boy. Notice.
Give me a notice roll against four, and we'll see.
Perdición, he's a burly fellow, but not so great with actually seeing what's going on. But the wild die helps us out here with a 9.
Look at that.
Love that
wild die coming through. Mm-hmm. So that's actually a raise, right?
That five should be a raise, because base target number is 4, and then 4 on top of that gets you the raise.
Okay, you don't notice any, like, so I'm going to leave it up to you to determine the threat level that Perdición attaches to this information. But you don't spot any, like, obvious supernatural threats, right? You're an experienced monster hunter. You sort of know what a person-eating supernatural monster looks like, right?
I believe we've already established that that Gug and Perdición have crossed paths before.
Yes.
And Gug, right? Like, you've established what a monster, man-eating monster is. Gug's over there, so you don't have to keep an eye out for Gug specifically.
Gug is eating kebab, not people. That is not an issue.
There you go.
Perdición is always surreptitiously keeping an eye on Gug just in case.
Wisely, we should add.
Yes.
So what you do see, however, is there is a 2.5 foot tall cat person. In what can only be described as like anachronistic clothing. Like, this thing looks like the merchant in a Final Fantasy game, right?
Okay.
With like an impossibly large pack on its back. With like just boxes lashed to it. The space the backpack takes up is like 3 times the size of the cat person, right?
So, like, I'm imagining it's a cat person in Renaissance-style clothing, but they're packed like Beetle from Legend of Zelda.
Yes. Okay. There you go. Yes. And they are leaping from, like, rooftop to ramshackle rooftop, sort of staying a healthy distance from you. They're probably, like, 60, 70 feet away from you. And they don't... Like, this thing isn't setting off, you're like, oh, that's clearly... that they're on their way to eat somebody, sort of sense.
No, that triggers the, that's a thief kind of alarm.
It's certainly possible. It's certainly possible.
Perdicion considers. He's not seeing them in the active act of thievery or attempting to elude authorities. So he will note it. He will keep an idle eye on them. Okay. But he is not going to... He's not going to harsh their vibe. That would be judgmental.
Okay. Okay.
Rude. Rudo.
Because, well, Perdition seems like a pretty cool guy. So, great.
Perdition has standards.
There you go. There you go. Alright, so while this is happening, we have Tweedledee and Tweedlebam here. Who wants to go next?
I'm happy to go next and save Jonathan for last.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so this is all going on. What are you also sticking to the mission, or do you have like things you want to do?
Oh no. Goro is 100% on mission, not messing around at all.
Okay.
He's been given a task and he will see it to the end no matter what.
Okay. Okay, cool.
But he is not being subtle about it, unfortunately.
No, Goro doesn't strike me as terribly subtle in any sense. So why don't we get a description of Goro for those at home?
So Goro is, I don't know, like, how tall are Vanwars? Like 12 feet tall?
Yeah, they're enormous. They're, on that order of height, at least, yes.
Yeah, so a very tall knight, dressed full in, like, you know, classic knight gear, has a lot of spikes and chains that you normally wouldn't associate with, you know, a knight. But he's all, it's in white and, like, gold trim, very upstanding looking, not at all like those other knights that wear black all the time for some reason. He also has four arms. They're all, and he's just standing in the middle of the road. He's just letting traffic go around him while he, like, is on sentinel duty, just staring at everybody as they go by.
Okay. Yeah, and you stand like half again over most of the crowd too, is the thing, right?
Yeah.
So if you stood really still, people might think you were a piece of statuary.
It could very well be, yes.
Okay. Yeah, you can see further down, you can see probably like over some of the buildings, and down some further alleys than even Perdition can. And I mean, you see mostly the same thing. You see a lot of different people who look to be here for different reasons. And I don't know how familiar your characters would be with Ironheart specifically, but this is a pretty common spread, right? You got people coming in from the sticks to buy equipment for, like, you know, water purifying equipment or crop dusting equipment, or, like, sometimes yokels are like, well, we've got a werelama infestation, I'm gonna need me some laser guns. And so those kind of peoples are around, but also, you know, this is now an area of conflict, so you're also looking at some pretty grizzled looking mercs and adventurers around doing merc and adventurer things. The other thing you can see from your slightly higher vantage is that there are a few light patrols of what are most likely Ironheart security in old style Coalition Dead Boy armor. Now,
without kind of armor?
Coalition Dead Boy, the
I'll pull a pick for him.
Yeah, like the black, spiky, skeleton-faced armor. The Coalition is actually phasing that armor out. When they started the rush on Tolkien, the siege of Tolkien, they put in a whole new set of armor that looks like it's basically the difference between like old stormtroopers and First Order stormtroopers, right? But they still have a bunch of what I'm talking about. The old style armors around that they sort of just like gave out to local aligned forces or backline sorts of forces that didn't have that stuff before. So that's kind of what you're seeing here, is you're seeing that like the locals now are like wearing the old style armor. Both because A, it's available and they were given it, but B, because you know, this area is now looking to, like, they might have more trouble around. Like, four weirdos might just show up and blow things up.
Is this an intimidation thing? Like, is this, here's looking at you, kid, sort of Nazi-occupied?
Well, it's more that...
A little bit.
Kind of, sort of, but also, like, the Dead Boy armor is actually fairly effective at protecting normal, squishy humans, so...
Yes. At least of its time, before there were like 400 different books full of better armors printed, it was Riss is no stranger to power creep. But the stuff in the original book, yeah, it was pretty good armor. Like it was probably better than stuff that you could find off the shelf in most of these shops. So those security forces probably pretty happy to have it. So that's that. Let's introduce our last player here, real quick. What I hesitate to ask what you are doing right now.
Well, there was some mention of statuary earlier, and it's in completely the wrong place. Okay. I don't know who the fuck put it there, but they were clearly very dumb. Okay. I am fixing.
Okay. I'm gonna redo the feng shui of this entire area. Alright, so you are hinging somewhere is what I'm gathering.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. So, like, there are these large statues, I don't know, maybe 7-8 feet tall. They're just kind of moving around, and if you look down towards the bottom, there looks like there's this really wiry little old man, about 3 foot tall, but doesn't seem to be having any issues whatsoever dealing with these statues, and just kind of putting them wherever he thinks they should be.
Yeah, so you're in, like, I'm imagining, if you found more than one, so did you collect the statues from throughout the town, or did you find multiple statues in one location?
Well, I mean, many of them were in the wrong place, so I'm fixing that. I mean, some of them aren't exactly statues. I guess there might be some benches or some other things that might even be private property. Who knows? I mean, private property, whatever. They clearly don't know how to deal with the shit. This is the wrong place. It needs to be over there.
You're performing a public service here.
Exactly. Yeah. Fucking teaching it faster than
I'm supposed to actually be. Yeah, this is a public works initiative being taken out on the Ironheart populace. Yeah, so you're getting a wide berth as you dislodge these giant statues. Relative to you, right? They're like 1.5 scale at most, but
That's still like three or four times tall as I am.
So yeah, you are gigantic, right? And you pick it up, and you've been picking up these up and moving them around. And as you carry these statues through, you can see the crowds like part as you walk through with these statues. What are you building?
What clearly needs to be built? The statue goes there, and that bench goes over here. You know, where it lines up with the North Star, where it's going to rise, and then I have no idea. I don't really care. It's just what's supposed to be done.
Okay, so you're hinging is what you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
Full on
hinge. You're building a statue hinge. We are like two pieces. We are 2 degrees of public art deep here at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. So what are you? Let's just say it explicitly.
I mean, as far as looking, a 3 foot tall, heavily muscled, grumpy old man. Like there are bits and pieces of what mostly looks like naturally occurring hides, I would guess. Like, I don't think maybe there's some cloth there. I don't know, whatever. Like, the only thing that I note that they're really carrying is a giant rock on their back that has some kind of, like, metal techno shit on it that, but it is also probably about as big as they are. And again, it's not a thing. It's just like, sure, whatever.
Yeah, I imagine the, like, external biocomp would take up, like, most of your surface area.
Well, I was also just thinking about like the hammer thing, which is like some kind of weird techno hammer thing.
Yeah. Okay.
It's strictly out of practicality. Its handle only shows up when I want it, because otherwise, it's taller than I am.
That's fair. Yeah. Although that is hilarious.
I mean,
I look forward to getting like caught on doorways because of the hammer handle. Yeah. So you are a Spriggan number one, which is a kind of fae that exists in a lot of. Mythologies and settings, but in Rifts it's specifically, yeah, it's about a 2.5-3 foot tall surly little dude who builds hinges. As in stone hinge or sea hinge or car hinge. Yeah. Hinge, right? Not the things that go on doors. And then you are also a dragon juicer. Which is a collection of words that only makes sense if you know the other things that make sense about them. So, basically, you have a little system that pumps dragon blood into your body to make you super strong and super fast. But eventually, it will kill you, probably?
Question mark.
It's not clear how it works with your specific physiology.
Yeah.
We're all 100% mortal, so.
Yeah. Yes. Before.
So, now that we've gotten that all the way out of the way, what are you doing? You're building hinges. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm literally building hinges. And to answer your question to everyone else, no, I'm paying zero attention to the fact that we're supposed to be doing a thing.
What do you do when the previously mentioned overburdened cat person uses your new hinge construction, like as you're building it, to cross the street over the top of you?
Do they move it?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Sure.
I curse them the fuck out.
Okay. Are you like going full Abe Simpson fist shaking into the air?
I'm mostly just, yeah. I mean, not fist shaping there. I'm just a verbal torrent of calling, you know, some stupid fucking little feline doesn't even know what he's doing, though. Does carry enough stuff, so I guess you're kind of tough. But you're still an asshole.
Okay. Yeah, you get even more crowd reaction from that. Like, people who were sort of trying to pretend they didn't see what you were doing and weren't going to interact with you at all, definitely take notice of the fact that you're suddenly yelling angrily, because that seems like a bad thing for the dude who can lift statues to be doing. Ranting at the sky. Okay,
it's possible that cat thing is, like, hidden or invisible or something. I just love the idea that, like, with the magic sense, I don't even know that. I don't give a shit. I'm just like, oh, I see him. No one else can. Whatever.
Since most of you can see the invisible, it's going to be unclear a lot of the time whether that's the case. So, for those who were keeping watch, Perdition and Goro, you at the same time, you both spot, like, sort of the crowds are moving around and milling about, and you spot what you think might be the person you're looking for, like, rounding a corner. And the reason you think it might be the person you're looking for.
That D&D podcast is released under a Creative Commons 4.0 attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives license. Feel free to share with friends, but don't cut anything out and don't sell our work. Please visit us at thatdndpodcast.com or on Twitch or YouTube at thatdndpodcast. Intro music is Now We Ride, metal version by Alexander Nakarada. Outro music is Shadow Rain, also by Alexander Nakarada. Nakarada's music can be found on freestockmusic.com, on Bandcamp, and on creatorchords.com. Nakarada can also be found on YouTube and Patreon at anakarada. Rifts is a role-playing system published by Palladium Books. Savage Worlds and this game's Savage Rifts combination is owned and published by Pinnacle Entertainment. All other copyrighted content is owned by its associated copyright holder.